Welcome to part three of our coverage of the Sonoma Barrel Auction 2017.
I'm here with Mari Jones of Emeritus.
Hi!
Her business card, her title was President of Fun.
Yep, that's exactly right.
You need to describe exactly what that is. Give me a job description, please.
Anything that needs to be done. Wine dinners, events like this where we go out and share the wine with people. This morning I hosted a group for a tour through our vineyard and winery. Tasting wine, networking, mingling. What's not fun?
You have a very cool job.
Yeah. I mean, what's not fun about the wine industry, though? Even if you're looking at Excel spreadsheets, it's still about wine.
That's right. No, you'll get no argument from me. Yeah. So your dad started the winery, is that correct?
Yep. My dad started the winery with a few other long-term partners. He originally started Sonoma Couture back in the 70s, so this was like his retirement project, hence the name Emeritus.
Okay, got it, yeah.
So he took the guys that he had been working with and started the vineyard and then built the winery a few years after.
And how long have you been working with your dad?
Oh, almost five years that I moved back, and yeah.
Since you moved back, you ran away?
I did, I ran away. I went to high school and college on the East Coast, and then I was driving back home, but I stopped in Colorado for a few years and then finally made my way.
And then you realized you needed to be back here?
My dad called me and said, hey, all those things that you've suggested that I do you think that you'd want to come do them? And I said, oh, finally you're going to listen to me. I'll be there in a minute.
So. And did that work? Did he actually listen?
It took about a year, but yeah, finally.
Excellent. This is a pleasure to meet you, but for our listeners, do you have a tasting room?
Yes, we do. We opened a tasting room about a year and a half ago on our Hallberg Ranch property in Spassful.
And is that by appointment or could people just come by?
You can come on in whenever. If you'd like to make an appointment for a tour or a little bit more of an intimate experience, we welcome you to do so.
That'd be great. And your website would be?
Emeritus, E-M-E-R-I-T-U-S, Emeritus Vineyards, plural, emeritusvineyards.com.
The president of Fun has spoken.
That's me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm here with Paulette Gamba of Gamba Vineyards and Winery. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. This is a great day. A great event. How many of these auctions have you guys done?
This is our very first one.
Oh, really? So what do you think about it so far?
I think it's wonderful. I'm looking forward to tomorrow and seeing the auction in action.
How many cases are you doing?
We're doing a 5-case lot, and I'm really excited. We've heard it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of excitement in the air during the auction, so we're looking forward to it. It's a great crowd.
And this is you and your husband, then?
My husband and I. My husband, Gus, is the winemaker. We've been making wine since 2000.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your auction lot.
5 cases that we're donating. It's a 2014. It's a combination of 2 Old Vine Zinfandel vineyards. We have our Gamba Estate vineyard planted in 1900 and our Star Road Ranch planted in 1920. All organically dry farmed. We get about 3/4 of a ton per acre off of those vineyards. Unique lot because we've never put those 2 vineyards together solely in a bottle before, so we're really excited about it.
That's it's got to be very interesting with that kind of a yield. I mean, that's tough winemaking.
It is. It's a labor of love.
Yeah, I guess it would have to be. About how many cases are you doing total?
We produce about 3,000 to 5,000, but just the single vineyard wines are usually around 300 to 500 cases per lot, depending on the vintage.
Well, it's something that you donate the wine to this event because obviously that's right off your bottom line.
Absolutely, but it helps Sonoma County and that helps us.
Do you have a tasting room?
We do. We're open by appointment.
So they need to give you a call?
Give us a call, send us an email, Vino Visit, or www.gambawinery.com or 707-542-5892.
You read my lips.
I did.
I'm really subtle, aren't I?
No, you're good. You're good.
Paulette, thank you very much. Pleasure meeting you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're going to talk to me?
Yeah, we're talking
okay.
to you.
Okay. Hello.
Nancy.
I'm Nancy Bailey.
And Nancy Bailey's with Gary Farrell. How are you doing?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
I should be more specific. It is Gary Farrell Vineyards.
Vineyards and Winery.
Gary Farrell Vineyards and Winery. So I got that right. Thank you. So how are you doing?
I'm terrific.
And you're obviously good friends with the O'Gormans, who are just fabulous people.
Yes, absolutely. They're just up the road. In fact, we get some fruit from their Westside Farms vineyard.
Cool. You know, I've been familiar with Gary Farrell in the past, but who owns Gary Farrell these days?
So we're privately owned by a gentleman named Bill Price. He owns Kistler Vineyards and Three Sticks, as well as Gap's Crown Vineyard and Jarrell Vineyard.
So
are you familiar with the Gary Farrell story?
To some degree, but I'll let you tell it again.
Okay. So Gary Farrell, our founder and our original winemaker, was one of the early pioneers of Russian River Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He started back in the 1970s and became the winemaker Davis Bynum, which was an incubator of sorts for all of those other crazy people that thought that Pinot Noir and Chardonnay might do well in our area. He made his first wine in 1982. It was 50 cases of Rocchioli Vineyard Pinot Noir, 1 year before the Russian River Appellation was actually declared an appellation. And it was released to great acclaim. In fact, the barrel auction lot that we have today is a 2016 Rocchioli Vineyard Pinot Noir.
Nice, very cool.
Yeah.
Now, things go a little full circle around here, don't they, when you get right down to it?
Absolutely. Well, really, Sonoma County is about relationships, and so we're very privileged to have really wonderful relationships with the older pioneer Grand Cru vineyards of the Russian River because of the relationship that Gary forged all those years ago.
And you have a tasting room, of course. Is that by appointment, or can anybody just come by?
It's by appointment only, and the tasting room is getting an amazing remodel right now. So currently we have what we call a glamping experience. So we've got these fabulous glamping tents, and we have amazing furniture inside the tents and little blankets to keep people warm in the morning. But we're only doing that until the tasting room is completed in June.
And for our listeners to learn about you online, how would they do that?
They would have to go to www.garyfarrellwinery.com.
This was nice meeting you. Thanks very much.
Nice meeting you, too. Thank you for stopping by to talk to us.
I'm here with Joanna Bernstein in a Fort Ross Vineyard and Winery. You're the winemaker or owner?
I have been with the winery since the very beginning. They've offered to adopt me so that I can say I'm one of the owners. However, I am not.
Okay. Well, what do you do for the winery? Pretty much everything? Or?
Pretty much everything. So all of the sales and marketing, working on all of the background projects, like our website, our marketing materials, our collateral, writing, talking, dinners, traveling, ambassadorizing.
So you're the everybody.
Yes. The owners like to stay on their beautiful property and play with their grapes, and I run around and tell the stories.
Nothing wrong with that. That's a good gig.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned something about you being closest to the ocean. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the Fort Ross Vineyard itself sits right off of Highway 1 up a little road called Myers Grade Road, and we are, in fact, the closest vineyard to the ocean at just about a mile. And so the only way to grow grapes up there is to be very high up in elevation. Otherwise, you'd be down at the coast in the fog. So there's a few other vineyards in our area. All of us are high up, so we take advantage of the sunshine up there during the summer months.
It's got to be pretty nice, too, but I imagine it's a bit chilly more often than not.
It is quite chilly, and it's considered a cool climate. And for grape growing, a cool climate is really not getting over 85 degrees during the summer.
And what are you primarily growing? As if I couldn't guess, but I'll say it anyway.
We grow Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And the owners of this vineyard, who are originally from South Africa, thought it would be fun to plant a few acres to Pinotage.
That's not very common around here, Pinotage, at all.
There's about 5 people growing it in the state. Last time I checked, there's about 25 acres overall in California, and we have our little 2.
It's kind of ironic to think about South African folks opening up a winery in America. I mean, especially because South African wine is great. They've done a nice job.
So they came over here in the 70s, raised their family. Lester, who's the husband, his uncle had owned a vineyard in South Africa, so he grew up with it in his heart and soul. And then when they started exploring the Sonoma coast, they thought it would be just an absolutely magical place to grow grapes.
For our listeners to learn a little bit more about you and the winery online, how would they do that?
www.fortrossvineyard.com.
Was that by appointment, or could people just come by?
We appreciate it when people call and let us know they're coming, but we are open 6 days a week. The hours vary in the winter versus the summer.
This is a really nice meeting you. Thanks
nice
very much.
You too. My pleasure.
Cheers.
Yay.
You know, it's great. Every time I travel, I go to some of these events, I run into a lot of familiar faces. It's like old home week, and we're here with Evan Goldstein. How are you doing, Evan?
I'm terrific, Ray. Thank you so much for the kind introduction.
Well, you know, it's always fun to see you because, A, this big smiling face, but every time I talk to you, I learn something. You're just such a wealth of knowledge, and you come to these events. I mean, this has got to be great for you to be able to see everybody, too.
No, it's really wonderful. I mean, specific to this event, this is the third iteration of the auction, and having seen it literally birthed year one at 50 lots and sort of an upstart thing to the exponential growth in the year two to now sort of more of a fine-tuned effort in year three. It's absolutely terrific. It's wonderful to run into so many colleagues and old friends here. It's wonderful to see the caliber of the wines and the creativity of the lots that are being shown. It's really a trifecta, as they say.
You're also in here tasting. I mean, you are intently tasting. You're paying attention. Plus, you're herding cats.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think the thing that is important to remember is that although myself and some of my colleagues went through and did sort of a pre-tasting and helped them vet curate, if you will, lots to be in here. Everything was done under code numbers, so we really have no idea what was what. So it's interesting to go back and remember specific wines, remember flavors, go back, taste them, get the stories behind the Shiner bottles that we get, and add a little bit more richness to the narrative.
That really tests you, doesn't it?
Someone's got to do it.
I know you got to run here real quickly, but just for people to find out about you online, is there a website they go to?
You said you were doing it. Yeah. I mean, we have a website. It's called FullCircleWineSolutions.com or www.bevcon, which is the conference that we run in every September now in San Francisco. But I'm easy to track down.
And where are you off to after Sonoma? What's next?
After Sonoma, for me, I know somebody has to do it. I'm heading off to France and then to Portugal and then back and then to D.C., New York, Chicago, and then I think it's June.
It's the only way to learn.
Someone's got to do it.
Evan, it's a pleasure.
Good
thanks.
To see you, Ray.
Cheers,
thanks,
man.
So much.
I'm here with Craig McAllister, and you're with the Jackson Family Winery, but you're the winemaker for the Primo as well, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I've been with Jackson Family Wines for about 10 years and was very happily promoted to the head winemaker position in December of last year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. This is an exciting time.
Well, I have to tell you, too, we had the Pinot last night along with the Chardonnay. Well done. You do a very good job.
Great. Yeah, thank you. We're so fortunate to get our hands on some really nice fruit. We've got all the toys we need at the winery and a great crew, so it makes my job easy.
That's the best part of it, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah.
Now, obviously, I'm hearing an accent, so I'm going to guess either Australia or New Zealand. I'm going to go with Australia.
You should have gone the second one. I'm from New Zealand.
Other than a plane or a boat, what brought you to the United States?
Gosh, I came here in 2007 thinking I would be here for one harvest with La Crema. And I met my wife while I was here, and so now this is home. She's from California.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard that story, I'd be a millionaire.
Yeah, so would I be if I weren't married, I think.
Well, let's talk about your wine story just very quickly. How long have you been a winemaker?
My first harvest outside of university was in 2004, and that was in the Hunter Valley in Australia. And then I spent 3 years on the outskirts of Christchurch in New Zealand, and then came here in 2007. But I've been pretty lucky. 2008, I worked a harvest in Chile and followed that up with a brief spell in New Zealand and then went to Cyprus in the Mediterranean for about 2 or 3 months as well.
Wow, you have what I would call a seriously diverse background.
Yeah, I've been really lucky. And that's one of the beauties of this industry. You can jump across the equator and do 2 or 3 harvests a year. But where I am now, it's one harvest a year and keeps me busy year round, so it's a lot of fun.
So you lived in England as well, wow.
Yeah, I lived in England for about 6 years, which wasn't in the wine industry, funnily enough, although they've made some strides in the last few years.
Yeah, they've made a lot of changes over there.
Absolutely, and I their sparkling wines are getting a lot of good press right now, aren't they? You know, I think if we ever need proof of global warming, maybe that's it.
We don't want to think about that if we can help it.
No, we don't. But
with all these different backgrounds, with all these different places, I mean, these are extremely different types of winemaking. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, they are. And I think that, you know, they're all things that you can put in the toolkit and you learn at each one of those vintages and each one of those different countries that you're making wine in. There's a lot of similarities, a lot of crossover, admittedly, but you know, you do learn, and there's something that you might remember from 5 or 6 years ago that you can bring into play here now. So
I think everything follows you in your career.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and in this career, you never stop learning.
That's a fact. You know, like we're saying about this experience following you, and again, you are always learning in wine. But in the end, do you spend a lot of time talking with other winemakers, sharing their ideas, and sort of getting little ideas from them?
Absolutely, and you know, one of the joys of working for a larger company like this is there's so many experienced people that you can lean on. And we have regular meetings within the winery with the Pinot Noir winemakers, and increasingly so with all of the winemakers. And you know, you can learn so much just by listening to your peers and your counterparts. It's incredible.
Key word is listening. Greg, for our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, how would they do that?
It's lacrema.com, www.lacrema.com, and there's nice little biographies of all of the winemakers on there and some history of the La Crema brand as well.
Well done. Thank you, sir. Pleasure meeting you.
Likewise. Thanks so much for your time.
I'm here with Susan Luker. She's the director of winemaking with Simi Winery. How are you?
Great. fun today at this barrel auction.
So tell me about your auction lot today.
Our auction lot is super unique. The idea behind these is that it's never before, never again. But ours is close, but not to not. It's 55% to not, so nobody knows to not. And that's okay.
I love to not.
Well, to not is named after tannin, which is also very unusual. So it's a wine that's known to be very tannic. Ours is softened with a little bit of Malbec and Cabernet. So it's 55% Tannat. It's a little bit of Malbec, a little bit of Cabernet.
When you're choosing an auction lot like this, is this something that you're planning well in advance? Or is this something that comes up to, tell me about this.
So we just look for inspiration. We keep most of our lots separate in the winery as they age, so we have a lot of choices. And then we try to come up with some interesting backstory or theme. So this wine really stood out as being unique and beautiful. And then when we thought, because we were calling it Tannat, so we thought it was Tannat. But then when we looked at the composition and we were like, we co-fermented with the Malbec and the Cab. So it was only 55% Tannat, so we couldn't call it Tannat. So that's when we came up with the close but not Tannat, and we loved it.
I think that's an awesome name.
I think it's a great story for people to tell. I mean, and wine is a lot about stories, right?
So Susan, for our listeners who want to learn a little bit about you online, how would they do that?
Oh, go to our website, seemewinery.com. There'll be a little bit there, or just Google See Me Winery.
Excellent. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's fun.
I'm back again with Joel Peterson from Ravenswood. He grabs me as I walk by and says, "You want to try another old wine?" That's just kind of one of those ironic questions you ask a wine lover. Do I want to try an old wine? Give me a few minutes to think about that.
Well, we find out whether you're really a wine lover, because if you say no, I know you're bogus.
Yeah. It's old. You mean it's old, been laying around? I don't know if I want to try that.
So this is 1995. It's not quite as old as what I was pouring last night, which was 89. But 95 was a really lovely vintage. This is Old Hill Ranch. Old Hill Ranch is a vineyard that was planted in 1885. It is planted by a guy named William McPherson Hill. It's 76% Zinfandel, but it's got about 25 other grape varieties, including a fair amount of Grenache and Syrah and Mourvèdre. It's got some very odd varieties like Tempranillo and Arborio and Millard, things you never hear about, but things that they were experimenting with early in California. This is a throwback to a vineyard that was planted in 1861, replanted by the same guy who planted the original vineyard. So he threw together what he considered his magic mix, and this is a pretty magic mix.
How do you determine, though, when you're going to put so many different grapes into a wine like that? I mean, is it just the idea of being such a focused blending?
Well, in those years, there was focused blending. Nobody made varietal wines to speak of in those days. They were all trying to make something called Burgundy or Claret or Bordeaux. Obviously, the grapes that went into it were none of the grapes that went into those. Yeah. But it turned out that they thought of it as a style. So if the wines were blacker and softer and rounder, or if they had more Petit Sirah, then they were considered Burgundy. If they were higher in Zinfandel and higher in acid and brighter and more perfumey, they were considered Claret or Bordeaux. And everybody had their style. Everybody had their own kind of proprietary mix in their vineyard. So particularly Sonoma County, you see a lot of these vineyards that are very distinctive. Sometimes they have more Carignan, sometimes they have more other grapes in them. Yeah, so very unique.
Very unique. One more time for our listeners to learn about you online at your website, that would be?
Ravenswood-wine.com. Just look it up on your Google. I'm there.
Excellent. And again, Joel, please keep at it forever if you would.
I'm planning on it. I'm planning to live forever. Yeah, I may not make it, but I'm planning on it.
Well, we're rooting for you. Cheers.
Cheers, man.
Thank you.
Take care.
This is really tasty.
It's really lovely.
I'm here with Donald Patz of Patz & Hall. How are you doing, Donald?
I'm having a great time.
How can you not? This is a great event. It's really good to see you again, too, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to see you. This is a fantastic event. I love coming here every year. We've been here, this is our third year, which is the number of times it's happened. And I love being a part of Sonoma.
A little bit of a change in the winery that you guys have sold it, but yet you're still operating, right?
That's correct, yeah. We sold the company a year ago, to the Saint Michel Wine Estates Group out of Seattle. They have been fantastic to work with. I couldn't have asked for a better group of people to turn our property over to, and they've been wonderful. And they've really been hands off. It's basically, hey, go ahead, keep doing what you're doing, and any way that we can help you proceed from here to your goals, we'll do that.
You guys have a fabulous tasting room in Sonoma, and certainly a place worth visiting, but it is by appointment only, is that correct?
Yes, and it's gotten so much busier in the last year that it's really important that you call ahead so that we don't disappoint you. We just want people to be able to show up and know that they've got a spot. So yes, please do call ahead.
And to learn about you online, they would go to?
www.patzhall.com.
Great. Donald, really good seeing you. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
As we just head off to lunch, I'm sneaking in a very quick interview with Katie Wilson. Katie's the winemaker for Annaba, is that correct?
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about Annaba.
So Annaba, we are in the town of Sonoma. We make Pinot Noir and Chardonnay from the Sonoma coast, as well as Rhone varieties from Sonoma Valley and Moon Mountain. So all in Sonoma County. But we are able to embrace the different climates that we have here in Sonoma and really make varieties from the cooler regions as well as some warmer climate varieties.
About how many cases are you doing?
We make just about 3,000 cases, so we're pretty small. And we're doing a lot of different things. We have some fun things like Peak Pool Blanc that we make on its own, and it's only 100 cases. So
what was that called again?
It's Peak Pool Blanc. It's a Rhone white variety.
Wow.
So yeah.
I like the name. That's cool.
Yeah, it's super fun. Yeah.
So how long have you been a winemaker?
I graduated from Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo in 2005. I have a degree in wine and viticulture as well as agricultural business. I grew up on a walnut orchard in the Central Valley of California. So grew up in farming, not in wine, but fell in love with wine while I was at Cal Poly and started working in a vineyard and worked in a tasting room, and I've worked all harvest in the southern hemisphere as well, so worked in Australia, New Zealand, and really came into Sonoma when I started working at Flowers Winery out on the coast, and I worked there for a couple of years and really fell in love with that area of the Sonoma coast and where we do source our Pinot Noir and Chardonnay for Annaba. And it's really just such a special place, and yeah, it's great.
Was it really weird, you know, being able to work in the southern hemisphere and then, of course, coming back to what you're more used to, or is it something you're easily able to adapt to?
There are a lot of weird things that are different, more along the lifestyle. In Australia, we had a millipede infestation in our house, which was kind of strange. There's big bugs there. But winemaking, it was just really cool. Really learned to get it.
How big were these millipedes?
They're like maybe 3 inches, but they were everywhere. We had like 1,000 in our house. It was so gross.
How do you sleep?
It's amazing what you can get used to.
Yeah,
thought I was going to die for the first day. And after 3 days, you can get used to it. And they were there for like 3 weeks.
Did they ever get on you?
Oh yeah, you woke up and they'd be like crawling on your pillow. It was so gross.
Obviously they're not poisonous.
No,
Exactly.
The centipedes are poisonous and they have 2 legs per segment. Millipedes are not poisonous, they have 4 legs per segment.
You find the time to count? Is there an obvious difference between what they look like?
Yeah. Usually centipedes are flatter as well, and millipedes are a little bit like more like a caterpillar.
You didn't have any of those in your house, did you?
Centipedes? No. Yeah, we're okay.
Sorry, I had to be down. I'm just like freaked out by it. You're far tougher than me because I would run screaming like, you know, no, wouldn't work for me. Adjusting back, was it no big deal though? I mean, to go back to what you were more used to?
Yeah, and I worked in Australia and New Zealand, so everybody spoke English, which was also helpful.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it's just interesting to kind of see a different region. Even within California, I've worked in Napa and Sonoma and in Santa Barbara, and it's like, even within that, there's so many differences, but in the end, it's all winemaking, and in the end, that's all, you're just, every year is giving you something new, and it's the same in that way, no matter where you are.
Excellent. That's very cool. So for our listeners to learn a little bit about you online, where would they go?
It's annabawines.com.
Great. Well, thanks very much for taking the time. I hope you enjoy your lunch.
Thank you.
Cheers.
We're here with a great guy who sources grapes from both the Napa Valley as well as Sonoma Valley, and that's David Ramey from Ramey Cellars here in Sonoma.
Actually, we buy some grapes from Napa Valley, but we're based in Sonoma County. In fact, actually in Healdsburg, the heart of wine country, in the middle of the northern edges of the Russian River Valley. So we're increasingly taking a strong position on Russian River Valley grapes and Sonoma County grapes.
Well, and you're a very respected winemaker, obviously in both valleys, but especially here. And, you know, one thing funny about after we did our interview, which was, I think, about 2 years ago, I didn't realize that you did a great deal of consulting as well.
Well, I do a little bit. In fact, we're in the middle of the auction here, and in one page there was Westwood Wines and then Davis Bynum, both consulting clients, and then Buena Vista. So, yeah, there's a number of my consulting clients represented here.
That's got to be pretty cool for you watching an auction lot do well when it's something that you've worked with.
Well, you know, I'll be honest. The thing is, new brands sometimes take a while to catch fire. And there's so much competition, so much noise in the environment these days. And in the old days, a lot of the buyers were experienced buyers who knew the rules. And now, I mean, there's a lot of new buyers. There's a lot of new bloggers. There's a bunch of noise in the environment. And establishing a new brand is not as easy as it was 20 years ago.
So you got your work cut out for you.
I have my work and their work cut out for each of us, yes.
Well, and you have another brand as well that you started right when I had met you.
I'm speaking from experience because launching Sidebar Cellars, that first year was, I'm totally honest, it was a little slower than we might have hoped. And the second year now is looking good. We have, and you know what it takes? It takes a little more noisy in an environment, a little press. We got a nice write-up, in the Wine Spectator, and orders are coming in. And, you know, 40 years later, it's sort of sad that, I want to say it's sort of sad that that's really what's still required, but it is.
Well, I think when it comes to marketing, you really never stop learning, especially because so much change between social media and just, again, so many brands.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's so many more people to, there's so much noise in the environment. There's so many more buyers, so many more bloggers, press, so many more brands. It's and so many more distributors. Even at the distribution level, I talked to our distributor in Washington, D.C. He says, there's 90 distributors now. I got customers that used to be good for 900 cases, and now there's three other people that he says, oh, I like them. I give them a few cases, and he says, well, now I'm down to 300 cases with him. That starts to add up. So the competition the wine business has become a very attractive pool for people to spend some money in and play.
That's a good way of putting it. David, for our listeners who want to learn about you online, how would they do that?
They would do that at www, which you don't have to type in anymore. I learned.
That's not a recent thing either.
I did learn it about 15 years ago.
Oh, that's good.
The tenancy's still there. RameyWine.com. One word, singular. Ramey Wine, not wines. RameyWine, no period, .com.
Excellent. David, thanks for your time.
Yeah. Ray,
cheers,
thank
man.
You. What a pleasure.
Yeah,
and thank you guys.
I'm here with Natalie Winkler of Westwood Winery. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. This has been an interesting auction. We just watched Kosta Browne go for $60,000. That was pretty amazing.
Yes, it was indeed.
And we'll leave it at that. You're the assistant winemaker.
I am the assistant winemaker.
Let me ask you about your auction lot. How did you do today?
Well, we did well. We entered two different lots. So one was a 50% Grenache, 50% Syrah, kind of Rhone style blend. And the other was a Pinot Noir Clone 115943 blend. So one of them has already been sold and the other one is coming up shortly. So we'll see.
Yeah, you're down in the 80s here. So it's coming down to the home stretch.
Well, being in the W's, it's a little hard because we're at the end of the alphabet. So having everybody remain, maintain their attention span for that long is a little bit challenging when the auction's been going for hours.
Sure. Of course, and again, we have this auctioneer whose energy exceeds the entire room in terms of human beings.
Oh, yeah, that's a fact. There's no doubt. I mean, he's already changed shirts once, and he's just incredible. The longevity of of his ability to be an auctioneer is incredible.
I would be on shirt number 10 by now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how long have you been a winemaker?
Well, I've been making wine since 2009 and have worked in various places, various countries doing so, in both the kind of the vineyard grape growing side and making of the wine after we get the grapes in-house. So
when you worked in different countries, when you came back to the States to make wine, was it a sort of a culture shock to be able to go back to doing it in this particular style, or was it something you felt comfortable with?
Very comfortable, because I'm obviously wired to be an American because I was born and raised here. But I would say the kind of the ambiance during harvest is a little different. When I've worked in Spain, I've worked in France, I've worked in Australia. It's a little bit more relaxed, which is both good and bad. There's a little bit less urgency to get things done, even though everything obviously, has their timeline of completion. And in the States, there's definitely more of a pressure to, get things organized, everything needs to be done now. But that's just kind of the American way. That's how we operate, in our culture. That's how we move forward. So it's neither good nor bad, but it's definitely a different pace. I would say the American pace of a harvest is much quicker than, say, in Bordeaux or in Toro or Ribera del Duero, for example.
They follow in Bordeaux, they follow much more of a sort of an organized structure, but then without that sense of urgency, right?
Well, it's organized but relaxed somehow. You show up and you always show up on time. They're very punctual. And then we have a little meeting, have coffee, discuss the plan for the day, and they are not shy about taking an hour and a half to 2 hour lunch break every day. And at first it was hard to kind of accustom, it's hard to get accustomed to that. Because I'm in my mind thinking, we have so much to do today, we're going to have a 14 to 16 hour day anyway. And their response is, Natalie, the day is going to be long anyway, we might as well enjoy our lunch period. So I think that there's something to that. I think that there's something magical about actually taking that long lunch break that really allows you to work through, into the night. And then it's just, it creates more camaraderie. I think it's actually a healthier model than what we do in the States, which is just like hammer it out, get it done quickly, and then go home.
Yeah.
So
do you think that if you're in that position to make those kind of calls, you would go for that? You'd do that?
Absolutely. I think that it's important, especially when you guys are going to, when the crew is going to be there for at least 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 hours, to take that hour, hour and a half, 2 hours every day. People relax. It's nice to have a good glass of wine and remember why we're here, what the inspiration is. I think it's very important to drink good wine during harvest, have a nice meal, communal meal together, feel that sense of teamwork. And that's really the time that you feel that is when you're together and you're celebrating, you're sharing a good bottle, and you're talking about what the notes are. Do you like it? Do you not like it? It's just, you're geeking out. And that's really when you bond and you're having a meal. And yeah, I think it's totally worth that. And that's one of the things I learned working in Europe is it takes an extra 45 minutes to an hour and a half to create that experience. But at the end of the day, it makes for a more valuable, a more just memorable experience for harvest. I totally agree with that.
No, it makes sense. I like that.
Yeah.
So has there been a grape that you haven't made into wine that you'd like to tackle, a particular varietal?
Oh, that's a really good question. Today, there's nothing that comes to mind that I haven't worked with yet that I would like to. I've done Chardonnay, Pinot, Sauvignon Blanc, Gewurztraminer, Riesling, Malbec, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Syrah. I don't even know. That's a really good question. Maybe some very weird Spanish varietals like Mencia or Prieto Picudo, or Italian varietals that I haven't worked with. I haven't worked with Sangiovese, so maybe something like that, or a Montepulciano or Aglianico. Yeah, I would say that's a good question. Probably some obscure Italian varietals that I haven't worked with before. Probably.
For our listeners to learn a little bit about you and Westwood Online, how would they do that?
Well, our website is westwoodwine.com. We have Instagram and Facebook, of course. And I'm on Instagram at Natalie Jane Winkler, Natalie Jane on Facebook. But yeah, we're all about estate grown, small batch winemaking. We're doing organic and biodynamic practices at the vineyard. We're in the middle of Demeter certification to get that on the books. And yeah, it's exciting. I think our wines are killer, and I just want to share them with as many people as possible. So.
Excellent. Well, this was nice talking to you. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you for interviewing me. I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
All done.
All right.
I'm here with Katie Wilson. We spoke with Katie just a little while ago, but we're going to talk about her personal project, which is called LaRue Wines, correct?
Yes. It's named after my great-grandmother. Her name was Viona LaRue, and she was someone who always told me I could do whatever I wanted in life. So when I named my wine, I decided to name it after her.
So she might have been sort of the inspiration for why you went down this not easy path.
Yeah. She definitely always told me to follow my dreams, and she was still alive when I named the wine. She lived to be 98 years old, and definitely a believer in working really hard and following your path.
98. I mean, other than that fact she lived so long, the pride for you to be able to have that name on the label to say, look, this is for you, that's pretty darn cool.
Yeah, it's really special. And she passed away before she was able to try the wine, but my great-grandpa, her husband, they were married for almost 75 years, and he lived a whole year longer than her and came and moved to California, and he came to my very first release party. It was really special.
Again, that's that whole pride thing, kind of stick your chest out going, yep, this is me, this is what I've done. So I guess my big question here is, you've got a good job, you're a winemaker, and you're making some very nice wine, because I got to taste it, but now you want to do something kind of on the side. How does that start off? I mean, are you thinking, what am I, nuts? I mean, how does that go?
Well, I always had a dream of starting my own brand, and it kind of all fell into place. It was one of those things that everything's happening at the right time and you either grab it or you don't. And for me, I had started working at Cayman Wines in Sonoma, working with Robert Cayman, and he said to me, hey, Katie, if you want to make your own wine here, you can. And I was 26 at the time, and in 2009, and I was like, yeah, right, I'm not ready to make my own wine right now.
26,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and right after that, Ross Cobb, who I currently work with at Anaba as co-winemakers, he came to me and he said, hey, you know, I have some extra fruit. I think you should make your own, I'll share these vineyards with you and you can make your own wine. You should start your own brand. And I was like, all right, well, this is something to think about. I have a place to make it. I have amazing vineyards to work with. I should do this. And I had written a business plan as my senior project at Cal Poly to start a small winery. And I took that business plan and I rewrote it, and I started talking to people about investing. And every person I spoke with wanted a bit of 50% or 51% ownership, and with what I was doing, it just didn't make any sense. So I had kind of given up, and right around that time, another winemaker, totally separate from Robert Kamen or Ross Cobb, came to me and he said, somebody did something like this for me once, I'm going to do this for you. And he loaned me the money. He said, I don't want any interest in your company, and you're going to pay me back when you can. And you know, the one thing, good advice I can give you is, if don't give up ownership. And I have since paid him back, which is pretty awesome. And I, before I knew what to, before I had a chance to second guess myself, I was going.
I think that's it. If you think too much, you're going to scare yourself.
Coming from so many different directions and being like, okay, you should do this, it was like being at the right place at the right time, and then having the gumption to actually do it, you know?
I think gumption is a good word.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of winemakers who've never got to do that, and you've got to do that, so it truly is living a dream, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it really is.
Very nice. For our listeners who want to learn about you, is there a website for your winery?
Yeah, it's laruewines.com.
How do you spell LaRue?
It's LARUE.
Just like it sounds.
Yep.
Right. Katie, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's lot number 90 from Silver Oak Cellars. We've got 20 cases of 2015 Alexander Valley Cabernet Sauvignon. So we're going to start this last lot on at $8,000.
Here we go.
You ready?
Last lot. $29,000.
Learn more at SonomaWine.com. This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery.
Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.